This is Do By Friday, a weekly challenge podcast with Merlin Mann, Alex Cox, and Max Temkin. This week's challenge, track what you eat.
Hello.
Hi, hello, it's Max, hi.
Can you hear my voice?
Yes, yes, we can hear you. Ooh, everyone sounds very good this week.
Oh, this is so good.
Everyone sounds very good. And here comes Alex.
This is not the show, right?
No, this is the show.
Okay.
Everything that happens on the show is the show, except for the huge amounts that we edit out every week. Okay, well, the buzzing is gone.
Mm-hmm.
Yay.
So I think that probably Chris unlocked some sort of setting back there that I think that there's a switch that's like buzz or no buzz. And we had it on, and we had the switch on, and Chris turned it off.
Yep, sorry, guys. I definitely should. That was my big
Alex,
thing.
Alex, there's where
there
you went
the
wrong.
There was on and off switch, and there was a buzz or no buzz
Put a bigger
switch.
Label on it, big mm-hmm. buzz label.
Can we start?
Mm-hmm.
Podcast begin. Hello.
Hey,
for very complicated reasons, I had to walk to work today, and we could get into that.
You need to get into
it. We can get into that later, but this might be an after-show topic. But I had to, for very complicated reasons, I had to walk to work today, and I saw
I'm most interested in the complicated reasons.
I haven't gotten into the story yet, so of course that's the interesting part.
Did you see a white Tesla?
I did not see a white Tesla.
A white Tesla.
I was walking through the... I saw a dump truck.
I saw a boy with shoes.
And the shoes had
boy,
lights
on
them.
Oh, boy, three boys with shoes.
Oh, yeah. Remember Heelys? God, I wish I could wear Heelys.
Heelys are all over my kids' school. They're all over. The kids
oh,
love
so
Heelys.
Oh, so they're still cool. Like, they're the fidget spinners.
No, it's not cool. It's, no.
You'd think that by now one of those children would have, like, snapped their spine and the Heelys would
well,
be
Well, you don't
banned.
Hear from those. Yeah. They go to the other place.
I mean, they can't talk. The spinal damage is
they
quite severe.
They send them to a farm. Hi, my name's Robert Healy, and I run the Foremost Farm for children who have had a horrific disaster with the Heelys. Send your kid to my farm.
So anyhow, there I was walking to work, and I was passing all the neighbors' homes, and I saw a lot of smashed pumpkins. I think at this point, the people who left the pumpkins out, they're are they getting smashed.
I think they're fair game.
Now, I have to admit, every time I see a smashed pumpkin, it fills me with a little bit of joy. Like, I always think it's a little bit funny, like, that pumpkin got smashed.
Aw.
Is that bad?
Yes.
Do you guys ever smash a pumpkin?
No.
No. I feel bad for the pumpkin. I feel bad for the kid. I feel bad.
Well, I mean, wait. Are you assuming that a child has decorated all of these pumpkins and done, like, an intricate pattern?
I worry about hurting the feelings of my shirts. Okay? I have a lot of issues with dissociation and too many feelings about the wrong things. And I always assume that anything I find anywhere is the lost favorite thing of a child, and it makes me sad when I see it.
Well, this is kind of a dark Marie Kondo. Mm-hmm. Where it's like this is the special shirt, and you don't want to. It's going to feel better if it has its own little space in the drawer.
I honor it by never throwing it away.
Do you ever apologize to inanimate objects?
Yes.
I walked into the studio door this morning and apologized to it.
Oh, that's so nice.
It didn't. No, no, it's not. It's weird, and I want to stop doing that. I didn't.
But what if animism is a real thing?
Oh, like the toys are indeed alive.
In the Japanese style, right? Like, what if there's actually a spirit in the tree and you just don't know it? Or what if that door is like a long-lost relative?
Well, what if it's a John Roderick-style animism where he can feel the shirt calling to him,
right.
John, come and get me.
His passport is in some crackhead's trunk somewhere.
Yeah. Mm.
Yeah, I know. I've said this before, but I used to have, I don't know, I was a really weird kid. And I would worry when I had to choose between shirts. I had a girlfriend who had this 100 times worse than me. I would feel bad about hurting the feelings of choosing one shirt over the other. That was a real thing. Even into like junior high, I would lay out all my Nike shirts and I would say, which one is speaking to me? Is it the yellow one with the swoosh? Is it the blue one with the swoosh? And I would worry that I was hurting its feelings. I know I don't have a rational basis for that, but I do sometimes feel that. And it's part of what makes me a little bit of a hoarder. And my wife is the opposite of a hoarder. My wife she's like a regular condominium. She loves throwing stuff away. And then I'll go out there and I'll be like, oh, this is something my daughter drew on a piece of toilet paper in 2011. How can we throw that away? And it's like, ugh, you're so broken inside. It's such a terrible way to live. Now, you're not like that at all, Max. You love throwing things away, right?
I'm pretty ruthless about that.
We covered this, I think, in our first episode.
Yeah, I think we've talked about this. I'm pretty ruthless about it. I'll smash a pumpkin.
50 episodes ago.
I'll smash a pumpkin. I don't have any feelings about it.
But that makes you feel good. You feel like it's time. You really know. You know that the seasons turn. You got to smash.
Oh, I think it's funny even before Halloween happens. It's funny. It's a little bit funny. It's a little bit, you know, it's like graffiti on the L. It's like, you know, hey, this the city doesn't belong to you. It's a little cool. It's a little bit cool.
That'll show you how to have joy and effort in life, idiot.
Follow up. This is from Slate. Dear Prudence, I live in one of the wealthiest neighborhoods in the country, but on one of the more quote-unquote modest streets, mostly doctors and lawyers and family business owners. A few blocks away are billionaires, families with famous last names, media moguls, etc. I have noticed that on Halloween, what seems like 75% of the trick-or-treaters are clearly not from this neighborhood. Kids arrive in overflowing cars from less fortunate areas. I feel this is inappropriate. Halloween isn't a social service or a charity in which I have to buy candy for less fortunate children. This makes me feel like a terrible person because you should really listen to that instinct. Because what's the big deal about making less fortunate kids happy on a holiday? Great point, question asker. But it just bugs me. But it just bugs me because we already pay more than enough taxes towards actual social services. Should Halloween be a neighborhood activity, or is it legitimately a free-for-all in which people hunt down the best candy grounds for their kids from Halloween for the 99%?
What did Prudence say?
Well, I got so mad that I didn't read the answer, but
that's so next door, don't you think?
Prudence, oh, it's very next door. Prudence said basically that it's such a delight to see the little kids and their candies that it's worth it to spend the extra like $20 to make sure that there's enough candy for everyone who comes by.
Well, yeah, I mean that's the thing that's inside of that is like the part that makes that difficult to listen to is that the question asker thinks that they're asking one kind of question when they're actually revealing, you know, it's more like somebody going like, you know, I steal panties from dryers and I feel like the drawer that I keep it in isn't fancy enough. Am I good? And you're like, no, don't do that. Like in this case, like, you know, whether you've got the means or not, like, I guess you could turn your light off, but like, how awful is it to give a little kid some candy? Like, is it really that difficult? I mean, does that really need to be like, you think this is like a social justice problem? Like, that's fucked up.
Well, there was that great Vox piece that was going around this morning where they interviewed a bunch of, I think it was in Maine, they interviewed a bunch of rural voters who were like Trump voters, and their thing was that like Trump's policies aren't helping them and he's not effective, but they're sticking with him anyway for like culture war reasons.
Right,
and
right.
It starts off where they're saying like, this country's going to hell and it's all these NFL players, they're so rude and they're millionaires. But by the end, they literally are using the N-word. They're like, it's like the N-word football league or something like that.
God, you just let them keep talking long enough and eventually the truth comes out.
I mean, basically, yeah, it was basically by the end of the article, it's like, okay, well, the hoods are off. Like we it's like, okay, I get it. We all see Ida here. It's like you have some story and then if you let them talk for 10 minutes, we find out how shallow that is. And there's a little bit of this with the Halloween candy of it's like, it's like they're asking a social, how do I put it, like like a social politeness question of like, what's the etiquette here? But really what they're saying is like, it's really an entitlement. Like, shouldn't these kids be relegated to the poor neighborhoods where I don't have to give them candy? And it's like, it's loaded with so much more than that.
Yeah. I mean, they don't belong here, right? That's kind of what it is. Part of it is this entitled feeling of like, well, you know, this, I'm overusing this term at this point, but you know, the meritocracy and the privilege thing of like, hey, look, I earned what I've got. You know, don't bring your little foundlings to my neighborhood to come and collect candy because that's not fair to me.
Right, which is so crazy because the kids, isn't that the whole thing?
Poor kids have the best costumes. Poor kids have such sweet costumes. Well, I mean, they might put some burnt cork on their face. they're a clown, but not really a clown. Their mom just gives them a half a cup of flour because it's all they could afford. They just cover themselves in flour. I'm a clown.
Aren't they doing the thing that whenever you hear these like libertarians like talk about what poor people should do, they're like, well, they should move to a place where there's like more work and like get a job. And like their thing is always that they always find some like remote oil drilling town in Alaska where they need workers. And they're like, well, right. Why don't you move from your city to this oil drilling town? Why don't you simply move and get a job and work hard? And it's like, aren't these kids, first of all, like what kind of fucking advice is that? Like, hey, uproot your entire life and family and go to this place that's objectively horrible that no one wants to live.
Spoken like somebody who's never had to do that.
It's an exquisitely like inhuman understanding of poverty and discipline and work. But more to the point, like, aren't these kids doing exactly what they said? Like, the kids want the candy, so they're going extra far and doing extra work to go to the place with the candy and then walking door to door and hustling to get right. the candy. Aren't they doing the thing that they're supposed to do? And now it's like, ugh, like, this is yucky. Get them off my doorsteps.
We should have extreme vetting. I mean, maybe if it's a gated community, maybe you ask, see some papers, you know, make sure that it's somebody who, you know, belongs, if you know what I mean.
Mm-hmm. They're taking our candy.
Dateline, next. Shut up. Dateline, next door. Cut that out. Dateline, next door. Neighbor Aaron writes, theft, colon, concrete pavers in front out of house. My family and I were out of town from Saturday to today, and a thief came by and took 11 concrete pavers from our front lawn. Somewhere in that time frame. Clearly, these aren't incredibly
valuable. Is a concrete paver a man who paves concrete? Because that's quite a heist.
They stole Eustace. Clearly, these aren't incredibly valuable, but it's more the general premeditation and distrust caused by it. They were clearly paying attention to our schedule to see when we were gone, had looked at our property beforehand and targeted the pavers, and then took the pavers that were out of... Stop saying pavers! You're making it worse. Then took the pavers that were out of plain sight at the edges of the house. I've reported this information to the police. Mm. It took the pavers. Those cost almost $2 each. And then one of the responses, neighbor Michelle, are you kidding? I just did a Google search for concrete paver price. They aren't cheap. And certainly not something you want to spend money on again this time of year.
What do
you mean
does
this
that
time
mean?
Of year?
I don't know. I asked my daughter. She doesn't know either. Thanks for reporting this. And what creepy thing to do? What's wrong with the neighbor Rosa, frequent contributor? Thank you, neighbor Rosa. What's wrong? What's wrong with people nowadays? Our society is troubled. Can't have peace of mind even in your own home, :.
Wait. Nothing
because they
after
get your
that?
They're going to get your pavers, Alex. They get in there and get the pavers. Yeah. You get the concrete pavers.
Especially at this time of year.
But Max, I thought of you because clearly to me, this is an Ocean's 11 type thing. They were clearly paying attention to our schedule to see when we were gone. They wanted them pavers. Had looked at our property beforehand and targeted the pavers and then took the pavers that were out of plain sight at the edges of the house. Don't you think? Do you think this is one of those where they bring in the whole like SEAL team to get the concrete pavers?
I mean, what do you want me to say? It's like if you live in San Francisco and these like insanely like wealth stratified like neighborhoods, like
yeah, don't you're flaunting your pavers. Somebody's going to want to get your
don't,
pavers.
Don't leave expensive construction equipment outside of your house unattended if you don't want
it's
it
an attractive
to be
nuisance. And then what they do is they wait until the insurance comes through and you can buy new pavers and then they come back and get them again. They get two sets of concrete pavers.
What do people expect when they live in a city? I don't know. Isn't that part of the social contract of living in a city is that you accept that it's a much more exciting and lively and diverse and interesting place to live, but you accept some small amount of risk of your cordless drill being stolen?
I think so. And this is part of what makes the Rand Paul story that is slowly emerging so interesting.
Oh,
is that...
we got to talk about that. What do you think? Please summarize it. What do we know? What do we know
well,
so far?
Okay, so here's one thing. What I know is, as somebody who is a privileged white guy who's lived in the suburbs and occasionally in like apartment-style housing, I know that I can get real bent out of shape out of things that I imagine are important that are not important. So the story goes that Senator Rand Paul comes home to gets to his house in Bowling Green, Kentucky.
Mm-hmm.
He's at home. He's, I believe, mowing his lawn, correct?
I believe so, yes.
And his next-door neighbor, who invented a vest, comes and does like a flying tackle, fractures something like four of his ribs. Everybody's like, what is going on? Is this a political thing? These are literal next-door neighbors in presumably a fairly affluent neighborhood.
But what's weird is that when it was initially reported, they've dramatically underplayed what happened. So they said that Paul received only minor...
Fourth degree, yeah, it sounded like a pretty minor. I thought it was a slap or something,
the guy's,
right?
Exactly, and the guy's barely being prosecuted as well.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if I tackled a senator and broke four of his ribs, I would probably be prosecuted way more than this guy.
Right, right.
What do you think
and
is going on?
And the story goes that there was supposedly, there's some kind of a dust-up between these two that involves lawn mowing and leaf blowing. Is that correct? Did I get that right?
I'm not sure. It feels like this story has changed because wasn't it initially he broke into the house and then it was like, no, he was
That's what I read,
lawn.
But there was a home invasion. Yeah. But I could be wrong.
Pieces of grass.
I think he was fucking the guy's wife or something.
That's clearly, okay. I just want to say it's obvious.
Oh,
I feel like
got,
on a,
he got
I feel like on a long, I feel like if we just wait this thing out.
Yeah.
Rand Paul was fucking this guy's wife and the guy came over and beat the shit out of him. And the right. reason that it's being soft pedaled and it's getting such a low profile is because Paul doesn't want anyone to look at it too closely.
But yeah, but also, but I think probably the thing that finally broke the branch was that as a libertarian, he felt that the orgasm was entirely her own duty, and she should get that herself if she really wants it. That's straight out of the Fountainhead.
She should listen. If you want that orgasm, you got to move to Alaska to the remote village.
You got to have the will. Pieces of grass and dead leaves may have led to the senator being hospitalized. That's a strange sentence. Many had been speculating, I'm reading from Newsweek, many had been speculating about what may have led to the fight. It wasn't really a fight. He got jumped. I'm editorializing. Which left Paul in the hospital Monday, recovering from the fractures and a bruised lung. But no one thought it could possibly be over foliage. His injuries could lead to life-threatening ailments, including hemopneumothorax, pneumothorax, pneumonia, internal bleeding, laceration of internal organs, and lung contusions.
Yeah, I read that exact article, and it listed like seven long conditions that were like life-threatening. But then it was like, but Senator Paul doesn't have any of these.
That. Yeah, yeah. They expect him back. I think Chairman Ryan says he'll be back, I believe, next week. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I have to confess that I have been really tightly wound about things involving neighbors. Noise, right? Like I've created and suffered noise in ways that always felt unfair to me. Like, oh, you don't let me have my party, or I have to work in the morning. Beep, boop, boop. But like even stuff like I don't like how people put the trash in the trash can. Like I've been super weird. I think it's very much a white suburb. Maybe it's just a general thing in America, but like I think it's especially a white suburban thing because people are led to believe that once you move to the suburbs, even if it is a gated community, this is my place. You don't touch my concrete pavers. You don't grab my cordless drill. And like any incursion into my property line, you move past that sidewalk. You let your doggy drop a deuce on my lawn, and that is a personal affront.
I think there's some broader feeling of like fraternity that people have living in a country and a city and a neighborhood together that's kind of unraveling on like a national scale right now where like it's this really delicate thing, right? Like everybody needs to believe that the other people aren't out to screw them in order for them to trust them enough to not screw them, right? It's like a prisoner's dilemma, and it's really delicate to get everyone to hit, or just enough people to hit cooperate instead of defect to have a society. And I think that things are so frayed right now between the shootings and the political acrimony and Trump and just a million little things that it's like it is harder and harder to like even your neighbor to like look at them and assume like good intentions and assume they're hitting the cooperate button. Like the more that you feel like the country is like unspooling, the more that it accelerates the process and you're just get mad at everyone and imagine them to be part of a conspiracy and not believing in the same values as you. I worry about that a lot, that what it means to be a countryman and to like live in a country with people is this like really delicate social contract, like the value of money or something. And if everyone, and it really isn't that much. It's like if everyone just stops believing in it, it doesn't exist. It's kind of a Tinkerbell situation.
Oh,
yeah. Dumbo's feather. Yeah, but it's also that, and this is, you know, the thing that's been lying in plain sight for years, and there's been books about this, you know, the bowling alone type things that people have been talking about for years, but it's something that's really laying in plain sight that people are finally talking about again, which is with this, you know, ridiculously deep political divide in the country, the divides in this country. A lot of it comes down to the fact that we don't personally interact with a lot of the people that we perceive as our quote-unquote enemies. And that further to that, and I'm guilty of this as much as anyone, but also that like the things that you see, whether it's on social media or the news, you're seeing an amplification of the most contentious and severe differences between those divided parties for all kinds of even newsworthy reasons. But that if that's how you draw your impression about whether the world is safe, you're not going to get a much better picture than watching local news. You're going to only see the most extreme things that titillate you and make you an Allah next door really draw out the kinds of differences rather than the similarities between people that could otherwise get along fine and just go, oh, you know, we're different. We disagree on that. Like there's these three things, though, that are so different about the two of us that this person is my enemy and we lash out if we ever meet in person.
So you guys are talking, you've like escalated this to a macro level. And I want to get back on like the micro interactions we have day to day. Do you try to like make peace with your neighbors if they're still probably racist and transphobic and very scary? For example, Blue Lives Matter guy, my lovely neighbor.
Yeah.
I recently just sent you a photo in the super secret channel. And so across the street, this popped up. And I live by a a collective of people who are very liberal and they're great and they're good friends of mine. And and they've put this in the exact same spot that the Blue Lives Matter guy has it in his window. And I was like,
That's awesome.
So yeah, somebody, like, somebody's hung a Black Lives Matter flag in their window. And so when he looks out his window, he sees that.
Yes. Yes, he does. Yeah. Like, directly, like, they could have put it in a more prominent space on this building, but it directly faces this guy's apartment.
Now, let me just clarify. Does he have a blue light in his window, or does he have a sign that says Blue Lives Matter?
There's a development. So,
Alex, doesn't he have an installation? Is it when you call it, like, kind of an art installation?
Yes. He has, like, an art piece of this canvas flag that is almost like a canvas painting type thing, and it's a, I don't know, can we call it a Blue Lives Matter flag?
He's got like a stained glass mural, like season two of The Wire.
It's very strange, and it's the, like, police American flag, but he also now has a Blue Lives Matter
the police
sign.
American flag?
I don't know, because the blue strip in the middle, right? Am I wrong?
Are you sure it's not the S&M flag?
Is it this a bit? I have no idea.
Isn't there, like, a BDSM flag that's very patriotic?
BDSM American flag. Let's go to that.
Yeah. You get the black and blue stripes with the red heart. That you, I think you should give that to him and say, "Listen, we need to mend our fences."
Here's something we can all agree on.
Very similar.
It's got a heart.
You know, in these troubling times, it's important to all come together.
Yeah.
Around the one thing that we can't
like
agree
on. We shouldn't have one opinion that dominates. I mean, sometimes I feel like we need to submit to each other, you know, in a kind of like, the way the power gets exchanged nowadays in the United States, it's so important to spank that on the ass with a butt plug. What?
You know what?
You're a dirty, dirty blue boy. Give me that nightstick. I'm going to show you how to do an interrogation. Handcuffs, really? Supplemental restraint. Oh, God. You think he's a power bottom? I don't think you understand how bad I've been. I have sinned in the eyes of God. I need you to make my ass raw and chapped like a hide. I'm a very, very bad policeman.
I mean, I would guess, I don't know anything about this subject, but I would guess that probably a staggering number of cops and authority figures want their balls to be smashed by a hooker.
Oh, burn my stamps, baby. Just stamp them.
Because, like Alex, isn't there that Alex Gibney documentary, the Wall Street documentary, where they talk about all these, like, high-powered traders and people, and they all went to these, like, these dominatrix hookers because they got off on they have all this, like, a power and authority, but then they, like, get off on giving that to someone else to smash their balls.
I mean, I'm sure that's a documentary that exists, but I think you're referring to Wolf of Wall Street, in which those scenes occur.
No, there's what's the Alex Gibney? God damn it, I'll just Google it. I have to do everything here.
Alex, let me ask you this. I'm gonna voir dire you on this. Is there any chance that it is a classic American flag portrayed in black and white with a blue stripe horizontally through the middle?
That is correct.
Okay, that's the thin blue line flag. Okay, the thin blue line. Uh-huh. And it is absolutely a Blue Lives Matter American flag.
Alex, there's two documentaries that I'm talking about. There's Client 9, The Rise and Fall of Elliot Spitzer, which is an Alex Gibney film. Right. And then there's also what's the Wall Street one?
Oh, the Martin Scorsese movie?
The one where Leonardo DiCaprio puts a candle in his butt?
Yeah, you're talking about the one with Leo and, yeah.
It's called Collapse, right? Isn't that it?
You're the documentary girl. You should know these things.
Yeah, Alex.
Now I just listen to podcasts all the time, and it's really, you know, I've changed my lifestyle choice.
I think you might have a project here, Alex. I just sent you an image. You can tell me. You can vet that in our super secret private channel. Does that appear to be the flag that is hanging in the installation?
That is the installation that is on our shared deck. But also, I want to remind people that this flag has lights projected onto it every night, every single night. throughout the Christmas season, like, we'll have Halloween lights, we'll have Christmas lights, but also we have spotlights on the Blue Lives Matter flag.
Well, given that you have access, I just think it might be kind of fun if you put a red heart on that in the place where it would go if it was a Spanky flag.
Yeah, no, I really want to do it. But not, well, here's the thing, though. The heart flag is just for the gay BDSM.
It's leather pride.
The leather pride, it's kind of like a, what would be, it's like a fidget spinner on a Blue Lives Matter flag.
Oh, right. It's like in the Korean style. It kind of looks like it's a yin and yang and another yang.
Yes.
Okay.
It's BDSM rights along with leather pride.
Okay. I'm all in.
I'm learning a lot today.
The Hill. President Trump says he's going to start venturing to various restaurants in Washington, D.C., a move his predecessors have done, but Trump has so far avoided.
And an interview president announces he will eat out.
In an interview with the Larry O'Connor Show on Thursday, Trump said that he was impressed by the kitchen staff at the White House, which he says is the best restaurant in town. Quote, I'll tell you, my favorite restaurant, rather than insulting anyone, I will say I love the food in the White House. The White House is the greatest restaurant. It's the most beautiful, Trump said. Quote, they do such a beautiful job, he continued. This is such a beautiful, incredible place. I love it. Special people. They've worked here for many, many years. Special people. And the food is very, very good. So I know that was a lot of information, but just to review, the White House, it's Trump's favorite restaurant. He doesn't want to insult anyone. Yep. He loves the food. It's the greatest restaurant. It's the most beautiful. They do a beautiful job. It's a beautiful, incredible place. He loves it. The people who work there, they're special, and they've worked there for many, many years. Again, to review, they're special, and the food is very, very good. Are we all?
Oh, man.
We got it?
Yep, I'm on the
same
page.
Should I go through it one more time?
Mm-hmm.
We got it?
Just do it real quick, yeah.
Yeah, the people are special. They've been there for a long time. Trump loves it. It's beautiful. Uh-huh. It's the greatest restaurant, the most beautiful. While Trump has dined at his nearby hotel, he said that he will begin frequenting local D.C. restaurants in a manner similar to Barack Obama and other past presidents. Hmm. Quote, that being said, in Washington, you do have some great restaurants, and I'm going to start going to them. I was accused the other day, well, when I leave the White House, which is seldom, I always go to my hotel on Pennsylvania Avenue, and they say, he should go to other places. And I never thought of it. I'm going to start doing it.
It never occurred to him.
You know, I think, I mean, obviously, you know, it must be nice that you got a staff there. I understand that a lot of them are very special and have been there for a long time. It seems to me that one of the nice benefits of having the best restaurant in town being in your house is that you can get food the way you like, Dateline CNBC. Concerns come from Greg Valieri, chief global strategist at Horizon Investments, whose views on Wall Street and Washington are widely concerned. He's very concerned about Donald Trump's personal health. Donald Trump is at least 50 pounds overweight. Okay, he's on the edge. Nothing, we're not shaming. He, quote unquote, loathes exercise, uses a cart for golf, and struggled to walk up a hill during the last G10 meeting. A Secret Service agent source to Valieri confessed that he has never, quote, never seen anyone with worse dietary habits, and, quote, never saw him eat a piece of fruit. Trump's food choices tend to be well-done steaks, cheeseburgers, and french fries. Yum, delicious. It's a better way to cook. The president only sleeps 4 hours a night and is, quote, angry most of the time and, quote, profanely berates AIDS. He has not, to our knowledge, had a physical in over a year because the results have not been disclosed. What could possibly go wrong? You sleep 4 hours a night, you eat french fries, and you avoid fruit. They're very special people.
Do you remember, I'm probably the only living person in America who's still mad about this, but do you remember in 2008 in the primary, it would have been in 2007, in the Hillary Obama primary, one of the arguments that the Clinton campaign made was that we couldn't pick Obama as the Democratic nominee for president because he might be assassinated. Do you remember that?
Oh, I do.
Yeah, most of us just kind of whispered that concern, but saying it out loud felt really weird.
It was an argument that their campaign made at one point during the
really
sort of,
that like was like a legit like this is something that they said. This is
I
a
think
risk.
It was I think it was a little bit dog whistly or you know they had it was sort of back channels or whatever, but it was clearly like a message of the campaign that they were trying out to see if it would stick. And you know it's obviously a crazy and very problematic message, but. You know, I don't understand why that is. Obama, like, probably almost certainly the most fit president we've ever had, the youngest, healthiest, most fit president in American history. we couldn't pick him because he might be assassinated. But Trump is going to keel over and die. I mean, I'm 30 and I eat like Trump, and I might die at any minute.
He's going to die sitting on the shitter with a well done cheeseburger in his tiny little hand.
The last thing he does is mash send on the tweet as he slumps over on the toilet.
His tiny thumb, his tiny greasy thumb, slides across the phone. It drops to the floor. He says, "Oh no, my phone," and has a coronary.
The only way I could be satisfied, you know, if he fucking dies on the toilet with the greasy phone in his hand, I'm going to be like, I'm going to be like McNulty in The Wire when Stringer Bell gets killed and he's like, "I got him, Bunk," and he didn't even know it. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah.
What the fuck did I do?
What the fuck did I do? You happy now, bitch?
I saw someone on Twitter. Someone on Twitter last night was, for people listening, last night was the Virginia election, which went quite well for us. And I saw someone on Twitter saying one of these hashtag resistance of people going, wow, it feels so good to win elections. I love to win elections. This is great. And I was like, you fucking idiots. Like, of course, it's like people have such, what's the John Roderick? They're all pig bugs.
Mud ducks? Long pigs?
they're all
ding-dongs?
Just like, people are such ding-dongs. They're such ding-dongs. Like, yes, that's the game, is that we want to win elections and hold political power. Uh-huh. It's very good when that happens. It's very bad when that doesn't
happen. That's
how insightful.
And my tweets helped. I don't know, man. I heard the recent campaign, they just had, sometimes they would go out and see up to two movies together. I can't believe you got me listening to that goddamn podcast.
Can we talk about Chapo House on the after show?
Yes, we should talk about it.
I have it on my notes to talk about it on the after
show. It's my second thing, at least, that I've been wrong about with you. The second podcast that I now am
yes.
on.
What's the other? What's the first?
The Bim Bam.
Bim Bam. Did I get you into it? I kind of did, I guess.
Trolls you too. Got me with Trolls too.
All right. Well, I'll take that win.
The
I love to win getting Merlin to like things, and I hate to lose.
Yes. Oh, it's a good feeling. And my tweets from the basement helped.
Veronica and I went out to dinner with some old people the other day, and it was family related, but then there's some old friends were there. And I noticed an old person thing that is pretty funny, which is when the check comes at the restaurant, they all sort of take a beat and then they lean in and sort of studiously, someone traces their finger down each line item and they studiously look to be like, did we actually receive that? Is the price match what's on the menu? Like they're like looking like they're in like some sort of negotiation with the restaurant over like every single line item on the menu. I've never done this in my life. I've never gotten a check and been like, I should investigate every item on this bill.
Unless the bill is off like
by
half
like
an
a margin
order
of
magnitude.
Hundred, yeah,
about
like hundreds
what I expected.
Of dollars.
No, we didn't get the $1,500 bottle of wine. That is the extreme edge case for me, because most of the time I'm like, yep, that looks good. Here's the money. But no, you're totally right. And in the family, like that's a big part of like that's the main way a lot of families communicate is talking about the bill at a restaurant. Other than that, they don't really talk about it.
What is that? I have never done that in my life.
He didn't order a Coke.
Like, what? First of all, probably the margin of error is about $10. And I'm guessing that over my lifetime, the restaurant's going to err in my favor about as often as it's going to err against me. And if I just don't look, it'll all even out in the end.
This is actually something I did last night, because we went to a lovely, I went out with some friends, there were three of us, and the bill came back, and I'm like,
El Cid. In Logan Square?
Yeah.
That place is very good.
Yeah, and it came back.
Did you go on the patio, or is it too cold?
Oh, it's too cold, but we went upstairs. That's a lovely place.
Did you ever go on the patio in the Logan Square location?
Yes. Yeah,
that patio,
I think it was with
listen,
you.
People, this is my pick of the week. If you live in Chicago, you got to get yourself to the El Cid number 2 in Logan Square and that back patio in the summer. Holy shit, it's so pleasant. It's one of the most pleasant places in the city, and nobody knows about it. Now I guess they do because I'm talking about it.
It was pretty busy for, you know, like a Tuesday night. But the bill came back, and I'm like, oh, guys, let me treat you. You're in town from New York. And it was $600. And I'm like, wait,
oh, no.
hold up. And we'd had a few drinks, and I'm like, this isn't And so I was that person, like, excuse me, is I just want to double check. And it turned out the bill was $60 and they just added a zero.
What? And how does that happen?
And so I'm like, oh, I'm glad that I did that. Oh, no, I don't know. Now I don't want to drag the restaurant. I'm going to stop that. Do your families have the thing where the adults fight over who pays the check?
Well, it's a total Jack Klompas situation. It's like, it's totally like you sit there and you go, oh, no, let me. And, you know, I don't know. I've argued with people about this. I think the way you do this, especially if it's something you do regularly, is one person picks up the bill for everything and then the other person gets it the next time. It's just so much easier as soon as you go down that road. But, you know, I have to say there have been times in my life, I mean, even fairly recently, where my means have been modest. And it's like, maybe we shouldn't order that $60 bottle of wine because I really don't want to pay for a third of that. You know what I mean? Like, and you know, I don't want to sound penurious, but like, people don't always have all the money, and like, you can't just. I think you do have to be careful about that part. I think it is fair to say, like, I didn't want that wine, I didn't drink that wine, take that part off of mine, but especially if you're like in college or something. But you know, I don't know. Life's too short.
You know, my power tip for this. This is a good move if you're ever trying to get the check and impress people. Get to the restaurant 5 minutes early and put your card down with the front of house and say, listen, I don't want the bill to come to the table. Just put it on my card. And that way, and there is no bill, right? It's just already paid for. And what's the reason this is a power move is you sidestep the whole fucking gorillas pounding on their chest display of two men, like trying to. I've literally seen my dad and his brothers do this where they'll literally pull the check back and forth in a sort of performance. It's sort of a piece of performance art for the whole family.
Right. Oh my God.
And then there's a sort of strategic, when is it acceptable to let go, to let the other people play? And I don't want to get into that with anyone or have some sort of conversation over who's taking who out to lunch or whatever. So you got to get there early. You put the card down. There is no bill. Everyone gets up and leaves. And if anyone says, oh, what about the bill? You say, don't worry, I got it. I already took care of it. And then there's no arguing. They can't do anything about it.
Well, here's the problem. All of the men in my family learned that life hack. And, you know, I'm still the baby of the family. And I never reached for the check when my grandpa's there. But now what he does is he doesn't arrive early. He calls the restaurant and gives them his credit card number. But then my dad and my uncles caught on to that, and so they would call in advance. So now my grandpa has a various we have these restaurants that like our family just goes to regularly, and so he has called them all, and he has a relationship with the manager that it's like, okay, Ron is always
the weirdest
the
escalation
one.
I have ever heard. That is so odd.
Yeah, well, I don't know. He'd feel guilty. He's Catholic too.
I was trying to explain. So there's something inside of this that we were walking, you know, when you're walking home from school, you have conversations about things. And we were talking about, we were talking about how there's that, I think, is it in Saudi Arabia? But there's that thing where there was this, I guess, tradition or law where if you said, I divorce you three times, like you'd be divorced, you have to say it three times. But that led to this conversation of like how you deal with the politeness, the required refusals that are nested in all politeness, right? So like if I said to you right now, hey, I want to pay for you guys to fly here and stay at my house for a week. Like your response would probably, most people's response would be, I couldn't possibly. You've got to say that, right? Even if it's something you really want, this is very Seinfeld. But you can't immediately say, hell yeah, because you seem like a weirdo. Be like, hey, come stay with me when you're here. Okay. Like you would never do that because you don't know if that person's asking out of obligation or genuinely wants you to do it. And so there is this funny like little dance. Don't you feel there's this funny dance you have to do with people where you offer something and then it has to be refused at least once. Isn't that still like kind of part of the culture? Short of like, oh, do you want a glass of water? But if you're giving something especially of value or potential inconvenience, don't you feel the need to say, no, I couldn't possibly?
This is very Jewish.
Is it?
Oh, I in my experience, yeah.
Take the pen, Jerry. Take the pen.
Yeah, exactly.
He loved that pen.
Yeah, but it's because you know that there's strings attached.
Oh,
or there
right.
could be
the
there
pen.
Could be strings yeah. attached.
Yeah, okay, all right.
Where's the pen, Jerry? How's that pen?
And then they're gonna has the pen, Jerry. And then they're gonna gossip about you and like what a cheapskate you are that you didn't refuse it and go to a hotel like a gentleman.
Right.
Yeah. Okay. All right. I feel like that's maybe. I feel like there's an element of that in lots of cultures, even the very non-Jewish Cincinnati. Well, it's somewhat Jewish, but like you just like you have to. part of it is to maintain autonomy. Part of it, I think, is to maintain power. But you know what I mean? Like, there is this sense of, like, you've got to, you know, you couldn't just say yes too quickly or the person might regret having offered it.
I've never had anyone offer something that, like, I wanted. Like, I don't want to stay in, all of my friends are weirdo artists and they have people over and I want to go to bed. Well, by go to bed, I mean watch Seinfeld on my iPad in bed. And I just say, oh, I have a hotel and it's not refundable, so don't worry about it.
That's good. That's good. Lies are important.
It's usually not a lie.
What you can't say is like, what you can't say is like with me, like, hey, you know what? I'm a real weirdo. I'm ridiculously outgoing, garrulous, friendly. Sure, you can take a selfie. I am absolutely that guy up to a point, and then the portcullis comes down, and I'm like, this happened at a party we were at very recently, where I walked up to my wife and I said, I'm about to get very introverted. And I was like, we need to start finding a way out of here because I'm about to go run outside and sit on the back porch and look at my phone because that's the thing that I need to do right now. I need to not talk about jobs and politics and zoning. And I need to be somewhere by myself. You can't just say self-care. Like, I just need to not be around fucking anybody for 2 hours to recover this broken internal energy that I require to feel alive. You have drained me. You can't say that because you seem like a weirdo.
It is a hard thing to tell people of, like, I need to be alone right now. I usually make up some excuse. It's kind of why I like being in school right now, is I can always be like, I need to study. And people kind of, it's weird that people respect that in a way that they don't respect, I want to be alone for my sanity right now.
Now, I want to hear about you, Alex.
You have an immediate, I never make a social commitment without a hard out, I go in prepared. But also, I have cats, and people can think I'm weird, but I do indeed need to feed them, or they'll destroy my home. I do indeed have a partner, and usually they need to go places, and I need to drive them. And you have a kid. Why can't you just be like, oh, kid? Like, that should just...
Well, I try not to do that too much, because I think it is obnoxious to do that. But you know what it is? It's the kid part is definitely part of it, but it just contributes to this thing. I don't mean this to sound like the complaint that it sounds like, but, like, I think when you reach a certain point maybe various points in adulthood, you don't have as much green field opportunities of time. You get a lot more of a rally kind of situation where you're rallied with dependencies, where you're like, okay... this thing can start at any time, but has to end by this point because there's another thing that might start at this time or this other time. This is not even accounting for. What if somebody gets a cold? There's all this kind of shit that I have to do mentally that makes me somewhat insane. But one way that I keep it together is by being very conservative about committing to open things. And it makes me sound like a real dick, but it isn't just a kid thing, but it's certainly partly a kid thing. It's like, okay, kid has to go to school tomorrow. What does that mean? Well, that means kid has to have hair brushed in the morning. Kid has to have teeth brushed. Kid has to, like, find the goddamn shoes and wear clothes and stuff like that. And oh, was there homework? Oh, guess what? We didn't know there was homework. We didn't find out about that. You see where I'm going with this? That's not even getting into what you then would normally do the night before to prepare for it. This is so fucking boring. But this is what a lot of people have to look forward to, is like, you no longer get to go, oh, sure, we'll get Thai food and go to Vegas for 3 days. Like, that is so far outside the realm of possibility for me, because there are so many rally points that I have to hit plus or minus this half hour. And I like that. I really like my life, and I get a little defensive about it sometimes. But, like, that's my bulwark against – well, apart from having a bowl to put my keys in. That's my bulwark against madness, is that, like – It's like I will get incredibly anxious if the schedule is completely upended and I'm starting to lose the tolerances and flexibility that I built in for what will inevitably at some point go wrong. This is why we leave early for things, even though we don't need to leave early, because building the habit of leaving early for things makes you a better person, helps you prepare better. Leaving late for things inconveniences everybody, and you won't even find out for years how much people hate you because you have not respected their time.
I mean, I don't understand why. Do people, like, not understand the kid thing? Maybe it's because I had too many siblings and I'm like, oh yeah, my parents were never happy and there was never time and they couldn't do anything.
The toughest one, and the one that I wish I could do more, but, like, I don't have a difficult schedule. I mean, I got occasional things to do. It's not that difficult, but the toughest one is right before DND kicks on, like around 8:30, I get the text from a friend of you know many years is like, oh, I forgot to mention I'm in town tonight. Do you want to get lunch tomorrow? I'm like, well, I wish I were tall. I mean, there's all kinds of things I'd like. But, no fucking way. Like, ask me 2 months ago. I got to check it out with the COO. I got to make sure everything's copacetic. Like, what if somebody falls down at school? Like, who's going to do the pickup? It's so goddamn boring. And the nature of that boringness makes it feel like a lamer excuse than it actually is, which is that I just try to build in tolerances for like when things inevitably go wrong. Like if somebody didn't sleep well last night, if we forgot to pick something up, do we have time to go back home and get it? And like I overthink all of that stuff, but if I didn't overthink that stuff, I would be feeling even more frayed all the time. Sorry, I talked a lot there.
No, I agree. But also people know I'm weird and they know like the problem is you're nice.
I like people. Now, Max, you're time constrained, right?
Yes.
Don't you seem like you're very time constrained and busy? Like, and you have people who schedule things on your behalf, correct?
Allegedly.
Mm-hmm. but I've been through this with you, where like you didn't even know that the thing was changed with the other thing, and like, does that cause anxiety for you? Do you feel like you've got your hands around what your schedule is most of the time?
No, it's a big ongoing problem in my life that I don't necessarily want to do too deep of a dive on, but like there's too many demands right now. I'm overcommitted. There's too many demands on my time and there's nothing obvious for me to stop doing. So It's very complicated and at times emotional as to like who gets my time and what I spend my time doing. And usually the first thing that gets lost is like my time. So, like, mm-hmm. It's been almost, like, 2 weeks since I've really spent any time dealing with my email, and it's gotten a little bit scary. Like I'm falling asleep, and I remember that I saw some email on my phone, and I'm like, that's pretty bad. I probably should have dealt with that a week ago.
The thing that gets me is where I have, I'm dealing with this right now, where I've kind of flaccidly gone, yeah, sure, that's a thing we can do. And the person clearly wants to do this way more than I want to do it and has much more urgency about how quickly it needs to be done. And I've already kind of committed to it. And now I'm getting the 3 emails a day about like where do we stand on that, Bob, kind of thing. And like that just makes me crazy. And I want to just delete all the email and like. But then I have this dread of like they're going to bug me again about this because they want this thing so much. And what I can't say at this point is I was never that into this to begin with, and I don't care about this as much as you. But now it's my problem, and that drives me fucking crazy.
Yeah, I have an email I've sent some people in those scenarios. I mean, the worst offenders where I'll be like, you know, did you ever consider that my not replying was actually a way of communicating to you that I wasn't interested in this and didn't
that my not responding? We talked about this. My not responding was my response.
Right, right. Mm-hmm. At this point, you've emailed me 6 times, and I made a conscious decision each time not to reply. Don't you think that there's a hint there that a human being could have looked at this and gone, "Huh, I emailed 6 times, and I got no response. Maybe I should just keep emailing." No, wrong.
Right.
False.
Right. And now you're the asshole, and now you're the one that has to like soothe them about this situation.
Well, I got one the other day that I forwarded, or I think, what did I put it in our Slack or something? It was really fucking funny. There was a guy who emailed me and he's like, you know, hey, I have my startup and we sell drills or something. And I don't know. It's like a, I don't know. I honestly couldn't even tell you what the startup did, but they're like, I really admire the voice and the brand that Cards Against Humanity has built. And it's really funny and authentic, and people really like it. And I want to know how to do that for our company. Could you tell me how to do that for our company so that I can have a brand and a voice that people really like?
Oh, God, I get these too now.
And he's like, could we just do, like, a call and you can tell me about it? And I was like, and I emailed back and I said, you know, normally I would just archive it, but this one really got under my skin. And I emailed him back and I was like, honestly, it was one of those emails of, like, I read it right before I got in the shower. And then the whole time I was in the shower, I just kept stewing. And it's just like, God, every time I thought about it, I got more and more pissed off. And I finally got out of the shower and I emailed the guy back and I said, you know, the reason that Cards has a good brand is like I spent years of my life working on it every single day and making lots of small decisions that we tried to add up to being something interesting and cool. And this is actually considered like a valuable skill, the people who know how to do this. And typically, like, you pay to get that skill. So it's not really something that I can do on the phone for you. This is something you would need to hire people for. And you know, I didn't say the Merlin Mann thing, which is, you know, you can't afford, don't ask what it costs because you can't afford me. I think that was, I maybe that was implied, but I was just like.
Well, I was just saying, like, my frequent response to things like that is I have two prices, which is free and you can't afford it. Free is I'm responding to your email and giving you one piece of advice. You can't afford it is I have absolutely zero interest in doing this.
Right. And I basically said, like, there's no possible way I can do this for you. And even if you wanted to hire me, so, you know, sorry. And then the guy emails me back, and he said, "Oh, no, he emailed me back.
Of course he did. Of course, fucking course."
And he goes, "Oh, no, you misunderstand. I'm not asking you to do it for free." He's like, "I would love to hire a team. Could you help me?"
Why don't you put together an estimate for him? Man?
And he said,
"Why don't you take some time to make an estimate?"
He said, "I am really excited to hire a team and pay them fairly." He said, "Could you help me spec out that team and recruit the right people?" And
no.
I was like, "Do you understand that's also like designing the team that would do the brand for your company and then recruiting people and helping you hire them? That's actually a lot of work. It's a lot.
Yes.
It's
that's
a big project."
It's like it's so wrong. It's not even right. Like, we can't even have a conversation about this because of how little you understand the context for the sort of work you're trying to scope out. Like, you need two projects before you get to the project. Like, your project feels like this thing where you ask Max how to make a Helvetica black and white thing. It's really not that simple. Before that, we need to talk about, like, how little you understand about that. But before we even get to that, you need to understand human beings. You need to go to a course. You need to go to some fucking island. You need to spend 5 to 11 figures on going to a fucking island for a year and learning how human beings interact before you ever send another goddamn email. Shoot your computer into the sun and think about what you've done.
But you know what's crazy is that he probably, I don't think I replied to that email, to be honest. And I think I just left it and leave it. And I think he probably now goes around telling a story at parties of, "Hey, you know that Cards Against Humanity? Yeah, I talked to that guy. He was a real asshole. And I told him that I needed his help. And he told me to go fuck myself and then didn't reply to me."
Oh, now you're letting the bees out of my bonnet now. And, Jesus fucking Christ. It's like, never meet your heroes. Fuck you. Fuck you, never meet your heroes. "Oh, I found out Merlin muted me." You know why I muted you? Because you're not funny and you're kind of mean. And you know what? But maybe instead of worrying about, like, meeting me, the hero, what would you do to act like a hero that I would want to meet? Why don't you become a more interesting person before you worry about what a terrible person I am, you piece of shit? Never meet your heroes.
Well, I got one. I get this on Reddit in the Cards Against Humanity subreddit. Sometimes me and the other card staff people, including like Trin, who's the most like giving and personable human being that has ever lived, people say, "Oh, I ran into one of the cards people in the men's room at Gen Con, and I wanted to take a selfie and talk to them about my favorite cards hands, and they wouldn't have a conversation with me. Can you believe what a rude asshole this guy is?" And it's like, come on, man. Like, I
that always happens just before panels in the bathroom. And it's like, yeah, no, we're finagling 20 performers.
The bathroom is a no communication zone. We don't talk in the bathroom. We do. And listen, just for my mental health, you can cut this out, but I'd like for you all to just make this noise with me together so that I can make it into my ringtone. This is the sound of all those people. You ready? Me, 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 me,
me, me, me, me, me, me, me, me, me, me, me, me, me, me, me,
me, me, Oh boy,
please,
that has brought
use
so
the
much
JC
joy.
Penney security foul and stop for me.
It's that has brought so much joy into our lives. We fucking cackle with laughter every time that happens. Even
you
if
hear
there's
it now?
Oh my god, even if there's only five people left, it's like it's amazing. Every time.
Hello.
I have a huge list of content that I have not even begun to fight with my list of content. I have so much stuff to talk about. We got to talk about Top Dress. It's not going to happen this week. We got to talk about Shark Tank. It's not going to happen this week. But I've gotten a lot of requests for phone follow-up.
Phones.
And I have quite a tale to tell about the boy.
Syracuse spent 20 minutes on this last night. You're going to hear a lot of what you did wrong.
What I did wrong?
Yes!
Oh, yeah.
What I did wrong?
Oh, no, but here's the thing. It's my fault. It's always my fault. First of all, it's my fault that I misrepresented his Britishisms hang up. I got that all wrong, apparently.
Okay. Well,
but really, I did, as with Roderick and his computer, I did not thoroughly enough intervene with you and your boy because you did it wrong.
I'm so glad that you brought this up because I was just listening to your program, Reconcilable Differences, and I had some.
Eventually, I'm just going to be getting feedback.
I had some issues
about other
shows.
Is this just how we talk to Syracuse?
Because Syracuse had some. He had some things to say about this sort of iCloud login vulnerability that's been going around, and I cannot believe that you let him slide on that. And I will bring this up.
What do you hear the latest one? The latest one is that he yelled at me for 45 minutes about my concerns about Steam, that I was paranoid about
that.
Okay,
let me, I am not going to get into this. In the after show, I have some words. Not really, I'm not mad at John, I'm mad at you for letting him say it.
It's all your fault.
I will address this in the after show.
It's on me.
And listen, John Syracusa, give us your fucking money if you want to hear the complaints that I have about your treatment of the
John Anderson Syracusa. You join all of the Powder Nation. You go to giveusyourfuckingmoney.com and you give us some money. It's patreon.com/dubyfriday. Give us your fucking money. My bad. I'm really sorry.
Now,
you guys.
For John, I don't know if John knows this, but we actually do a second episode every single week. So the people who are listening to this, if you're on the normal feed, you're only hearing half the episodes. We have two episodes every week, and you get the second one. You go to giveusyourfuckingmoney.com, US $5. You get the secret feed. You get to participate in the challenges, and you get to hear me yell at John Syracuse about the iCloud login vulnerability.
And the fact that I screwed it up. Sorry.
I'm not going to yell at John. I'm going to yell at Merlin because I don't understand how you let him say that. Now, here's the deal. I signed up for the boy on TaskRabbit, and the guy canceled. He just didn't. It was just like. I guess they have a thing saying I'm not going to actually accept this. And then I was sort of going through, I was sort of trying to pick another boy and reschedule it. And I really felt that I had some moral hangups about it because I ultimately felt I was trying to figure out how to tell the guy like, okay, you're going to need to, I'll pay you in cash, but you need to go there really early and et cetera, et cetera. And at the same time, Alex and I have our friend Joshua has been on the show before. Joshua was going to wait in line at the Michigan Avenue Apple store, and he was going to get in line at 2 a.m. And I asked him, and I was like, do you think if I'm hiring a line waiter that he needs to be there at 2 a.m.? And Joshua was like, absolutely, if you definitely want the phone. And I was like, you know, I really would not do this myself, almost no matter how much money someone offered me, just because I don't want to sit outside of a store from 2 a.m. to 8 a.m. I mean, that just is not a thing that I feel is sort of dignified for me to do. It would be hard for me to find that a way to make that like palatable and fun. And it was really cold and rainy too in Chicago. And I have this idea in at Cards and the other sort of ventures that I'm involved in that I don't like to hire people for jobs that I personally wouldn't do myself for sort of like quality of life or dignity reasons. Like, so for that reason, we don't have like a janitor or a front of door person. Like, we try and all pitch in and do those things, or it's a more distributed way of doing that kind of stuff. And I ultimately just could not pull the trigger on the boy. So I didn't. So there was no boy, and not no judgment on the people who get it, except that objectively they're worse people than me and have worse ethics. So
the gig economy service that cleans your office, they're getting what, like hundreds of dollars a week.
It's not a
office hagrid.
Yeah, we have an office hagrid, but it's not a gig economy anymore. We hired them outright. We like hired the.
Oh,
yeah,
nice.
We have like a cleaning company, and it's our guy Jimmy comes, and we're friends with him.
Jimmy's got to clean.
It's a pretty plum gig, except for when he has to battle the shitlord on our behalf.
I will speak your true name.
Yeah. But again, like he's not really doing much that I haven't done myself in the office. Let's see. So the end of the story is. We have some other people who have poached from the Apple stores who work at in our organization now, and I reached out to them and I said, "Hey, do you know anyone who still works at the Lincoln Park Apple Store who could, give me?" I said, "I don't want to know anything that I'm not supposed to know. I don't want any special treatment, but could I get some sort of strategy on how to get one of these phones sooner than late December when my ship date was?" And they called their friends who work in the storeroom, and they said, "Yeah, they're basically getting phones in every morning, and you can go, there's like these websites that tell you when the phones are in stock, and those are usually pretty good, or you can just show up early before opening and get in line." So what I did was, when did the phone came out on Friday, right?
Yes.
Saturday morning, I got up pretty early. I got up at like 8, and I think the Apple Store opens at 9 or 10 on a Saturday. And I opened up the Apple Store app on the phone, and I went to the iPhone X, and I was like, and I went through the the iPhone 10, is that how we're saying it? Mm-hmm. I went through the 10, I'll put the 10 in my cart, and I went through the mock checkout experience, and what popped up but available for in-store pickup today, right in the app. So
that was Syracuse's advice.
So I couldn't.
First thing in the morning.
I could
check.
Not fucking believe it. It was right there in the app, and so I, I canceled. So I canceled my order on the app because you can only they don't allow you to sort of have two simultaneous orders for the iPhone X10, and I canceled it and I put it in my cart, and then it said select your pickup time, and I selected 11 a.m. to 11:30 a.m. and I got I checked out. I got in my car. I drove to the Apple Store. I got in line at like 11:45 a.m., but what I did not understand is that 11 a.m. pickup appointment means get to the Apple Store at like 9 a.m. Like the line
what?
Was – the line was – maybe it was really bad line management. I mean, so to give them a little bit of – you know, like let them off the hook a little bit, it was mm-hmm. probably the second day of an insane fucking sales day, right? And there was still a mm-hmm. line going around the store, but – I showed up and I got put in the line with like the 12:30 to 1 o'clock people, and I tried to protest, but everyone who shows up to the Apple Store is a fucking fancy prince who has they're waving, everyone's waving a piece of paper or waving their phone at the people and saying that they're a special case. And I actually
have you seen my blog?
Yeah, and I actually was a special case, but they wouldn't listen to me.
You were the fancy prince.
I really got, and I.
There's nothing more annoying than people who want the privilege that I.
And
deserve.
I got. I mean, they're really the worst. And I got. I totally got cocked. And I had to wait in line. And it was raining, and I waited in line for over an hour.
Oh no.
For over an hour, I waited in line. And the problem was every minute felt like the last minute that I would be in line, but it wound up being an hour. And and two things happened in line that were really frustrating. Thing number one, okay. Number one, a sort of, so an Apple representative came out and she was saying, is anyone here prepaid? You've already paid for your phone and you're just picking it up and you don't need any personal setup. So you're just taking the phone in the box and leaving. And a couple people put their hands up and I put my hand up. But the problem was she was further back in the line. She was talking to the 2 to 3 o'clock people and taking them out of line and expediting them and bringing them to the front of the store. And I was like, and I fucking totally got passed up. So the second or third time that this happened, I said, excuse me, I'm an 11 o'clock pickup. I'm already suffering. I'm in the wrong part of the line. And I'm just picking the phone up. I don't want anyone to peel the plastic off the phone. I want to peel the plastic off the phone. And so she took me and she said, okay, you can come in with our group. And I was elated. I was like, I get to go inside in the warmth and go straight to the thing. But then a guy in front of me who was in the fucking 10:30 a.m. pickup put his hand up and was like, I'm also in that group. And she said, you know what? I'm going to cap it at this group, gesturing to us. And then I said, I don't know what crossed into my head, but I said, you know what? I'm going to let him take my place in line because he's further up than me. And she said, that's very nice, and let him go in my place. And I got back into line. And I thought for sure that because I was a good boy that I had earned mm-hmm. a treat and she was going to come and select me to come back out again. You know, like I felt like I had sort of did that, but I felt like there was an understanding that because I – like if this were a movie, I would get pulled out of line and I'd be given like 2 free phones mm-hmm, for my mm-hmm. valor.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
No, I had to wait in line and they kept pulling people out behind me and I got no special recognition.
They did not acknowledge your valor.
For my act of heroism. So
no justice, no peace.
It was – we live in a fucking society here, people. I threw myself on that grenade, and I was not. I didn't get a fucking Purple Heart or a medal or anything. Where is my parade? Well, nobody even said thank you for your service.
I got to hear how this turned out. So what happened?
So, number one, I just want to say, if you work for Apple, I know that there's people who work for Apple who listen to our podcast. If you work for Apple, please make this right. I did a service. I gave my spot up to someone else. Could you please send me a free lightning cable or something? Give me mm-hmm. something. Give me something.
I mean, just acknowledge the not the gesture. I mean, like what you did, it was a Sophie's Choice type situation. You said take me.
Just
take
give me a letter from Tim Cook. I'll be happy with a letter. That's mm-hmm. all I want is my recognition for the very honorable thing that I did by giving up my space to someone in front of me. Now, number two, the other thing that happened was while I was waiting in line in the rain, a very old Japanese man came by with a cane, and he came sort of walking by the line. He was very confused, and he goes, and I'm not going to do the very problematic accent that he had, But he said, why is everyone in this line? Why is everyone in this line? And everyone sort of looked down at their shoes. And I was like, well, we're all going to ignore this old man. So I was like, fine, I'll be the one who engages with him. And I said, it's the new iPhone. We're all waiting in line for the new iPhone. And I kind of know how pathetic and sad that is to say that we're waiting in line in the rain outside of an Apple store at 11 o'clock on a Saturday for the new iPhone. I know that that is a bad look. And I thought that would end it and I would be content to, he would just leave me in my shame. But no, he said, oh, why are you getting this phone? What's good about this phone? Now, how would you answer?
Right.
You can be a little fox that talks.
Yeah.
You don't have to use your hand to unlock it anymore.
And he's going to be like, I know that he's asking what's in this phone that's worth waiting in line for. And the honest truth is nothing is in the phone that's worth waiting in line for.
This is another lie. Well, no, it's not a lie.
The screen's a little bit bigger?
No, you just say, oh, well, my other phone isn't working that well, so I need to get
another
one.
But I was on the phone playing games in the line.
Well, no, you should be like, oh, yeah, see, look at this. I'm poking the screen, and it's not fast enough.
I have to unlock it with Touch ID like a real fucking caveman.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, it was just a real moment of shame, and I think I was like, the camera's better, and then he sort of was like, gave me a look like, are you out of your fucking mind, and walked away.
And then he whips out five iPhone 10s in his pocket. Yeah. Fuck you.
Oh, if he opened his trench coat and was like, sayonara. And was like, $2,000, you can have one. I would have gotten out of line and bought one immediately.
What's Tiff eating this week?
Oh, you mean like our friend Tiff
mm-hmm,
Arman?
Mm-hmm.
Today, Tiff is enjoying a light lunch of solar honeyed ova of Bantam Jersey Henlet.
Oh my God.
With chipotle adjacent vegan maitre d' sauce and foundling mortadella heptagons with room temperature leek jellies. And that's served on Fountain Bleu aged crostini and sliced diagonally.
What? Maitre d' sauce?
Maitre d' sauce. You ever make a maitre d' sauce for your Chateaubriand, if you know what I mean?
Mm.
I love maitre d' sauce.
Oh, God.
It's so hard
is
to find.
Is that a sauce made of
Bantam Jersey Henlet?
Maitre d's?
Literally, yeah, it's made of squeeze.
I mean, an apple sauce is made from apples.
Excuse me, Pierre.
You go on next door. My maitre d' was stolen.
My maitre d'. We've taken the best parts of the beef and squeezed our head a little.
I always know I'm going to squeeze the beef before I squeeze it.
Maitre d's like talking to me. I always book ahead and I slip a $20 bill into their hand. I'm not sure who this character is turning into. Oh my God, you guys. Did you listen to Jonathan Groff on Fresh Air?
Yes.
Listen to everything Jonathan Groff says, because he is just, I want to be his friend so much in a way that's just flatly creepy.
Yep.
Who is this? Jonathan Groff. Come on, Dubai Friday.
He's the Mindhunter. he's Jonathan Strongman. What's his name? Holden Caulfield. What's his name?
Holden Caulfield?
Robert Linebacker. What's his name on Mindhunter? He's the boy. He's the boy on
the guy.
On Mindhunter.
Mm-hmm.
He's the guy. He's the king from Hamilton. He's the guy who sings to his reindeer in Frozen. Mm-hmm. And he's utterly charming. He's one of the gay guys on the Looking Show.
And Spring Awakening.
And he's utterly charming.
That was his big breakout.
What was?
Spring Awakening. He was a horny German teen.
Ah, horny German teen. He also apparently played Rolf in The Sound
yes,
of Music.
Yes, he did.
he was a Nazi with 17 minutes of stage time. What a charming. You know what? I want to put that in show notes. He's so charming. All right.
Dick Doug, Max, you want to tell us about the challenge?
Yes, the challenge this week was to keep a food journal and talk about, pick one day of the week and talk about everything that you ate during that day and the experience and everything that you learned.
I have always found this very challenging. I have tried to do this before, and I've always found it very difficult. I'm here to say this stuff has come a long way. It has gotten a lot easier to do. You still have to remember to do it, but I was amazed. I used my fitnesspal.com. I think I misspoke last time. I think I thought it was something else, but I used my fitnesspal, and it was amazing. like as you'll see in mine, when you say brand names, it's not just like McDonald's Big Mac. Like it knew junior sized popcorn at a Cinemark theater. It made it so much easier to do. I still found it very challenging to remember and very humiliating if I was honest with myself about what I actually ate. But it was way less difficult than I remember it being in the past.
I just put mine in the super secret text channel, and it's not great. It's been a long oh god, it's Wednesday. It's been an interesting week.
What did you guys? I'm curious about. So I've been doing a lot of diet experimentation over the last like month or two. In with my I have a new trainer. My personal
is it Todd?
No, Todd is gone, and I kind of burned out on working out with him. And I've been going to a bunch of different places, and now I have a new personal trainer, Chris, who I fucking love, and he's the best personal trainer I've ever had. I have like a really good string of uninterrupted like going to the gym and not canceling, and I really love it and feel very good about it. I've been doing a lot of like diet experimentation, so I've been doing the food journaling and all of that. But I'm curious, like what you guys. Did you have any takeaways where you like looked at the results and it was surprising or interesting in some way?
Well, I guess I'm just gonna go over what I did 2 days. For breakfast, I had a Eggo multigrain low fat waffle and a Red Bull Tangerine Orange Edition. For lunch, I had a piece of cheese pizza because
Alex,
it was free.
This is very Donald Trump.
And at the office for dinner, I had another piece of cheese pizza.
I think you might have shirked a little bit on energy drink reporting.
Because no, but I did. Here's the problem. So then for snacks, I in the evening I watched Shark Tank, and then I was like, huh, I'm gonna have some popcorn. And then I had some popcorn. However,
popcorn's
so
good.
Yesterday,
what is that?
Popcorn.
It's a tiny popcorn from Shark Tank.
Mm-hmm.
I see.
It's small, so you can shovel more fits on a spoon, and you can shovel it into your mouth more quickly. And then yesterday I kind of forgot to eat. So for breakfast, I had a sugar-free Red Bull. For lunch, I had a Diet Coke. And then for dinner, I had a large Diet Coke from McDonald's and a large French fry. And for snacks, I had a single piece of Kirkland organic roasted seaweed that I'm like still burping up fish food because my friend Savannah made me eat it.
Yikes.
And I'm still mad about it. And then I went to bed feeling like garbage, and I forgot to eat breakfast again. And I'm also having a Red Bull Tangerine Orange Edition. It's great.
Holy shit, Alex!
Yeah, this I'm gonna really die. Something. I'm gonna die.
Do you? What's wow. your? I mean,
it's a great way to lose
you,
weight. Is forget to eat.
How do you
busy at
how
work?
Do you, how do you feel when you eat that food? Because like I, at some point in my life, I hit an age where if I eat like that, I feel like sleepy and angry all day.
That's the thing. Normally, I just like eat almonds all day, and I was prepared for you guys to make fun of my 7 almonds. But I one thing I noticed is this office. It's like, oh, I don't have to pay for food, so I'm just gonna eat what is in front of me. Like we had this, we went on this lovely like mini short meditation retreat, and then came back, and there was a ton of pizza, and so that was just my whole day. And I was like, okay, don't need to pay for food, don't need to think about it. And the problem with yesterday was I did not think about it until I was driving home very late from work, and was like, well. Real food's too much, but I bet McDonald's has some really great cold fries right now, and they did. The end. Mm. Yeah, no, it's real. It's
not that bad, and you're staying hydrated. You're having lots of Coke.
Well,
that's good.
Actually, I was kind of disappointed. It's hard to track water. It doesn't put it in. Like I drink a ton
of
water.
It's got a whole button for water.
Yeah, but it doesn't show up in your thing. So I use a water minder, which is really, I don't know, it's really good. And I think the UI is also better than MyFitnessPal by Under Armour.
What's it called? Water minder?
Yes. And there's a like really great widget. So every time I have water, I just push a little button, and then it has a cute little icon of
does
your body.
Does it minder you to drink the water?
If you want. I turned it off because I do drink a ton of water during the day anyway.
I need to get better at that. That's a bad habit I have.
Alex, on my Fitness Pal, there's a button for water. You hit plus, you hit water, and then you say how many units you had.
But does it maybe I did it wrong. Oh, yeah, you're right. Oh, now, but I like water reminder.
I have a couple of
cute little thingies.
I have a couple of hacks. I'm you guys might know about this because I found out about it from you, but you guys might you might be into this kind of stuff. Like, so like, do you know about so there's a couple of Apple Watch apps that I honestly spent more time like futzing with like Apple Watch apps that do health things than actually worrying about this challenge. But do you guys know about Health Face?
I have it, but I've never used it because, but tell us about
it. So Health Face is by the same developer who makes Streaks, which is Streaks is the best fucking app. It's so cool and slick, and I have no idea how to use it or incorporate it into my life in any way. But it's cool. But basically,
I use Streaks. It reminds me to get a 20-minute workout every day.
Do you do that?
I try really hard, yeah.
But does it?
For me, a workout is a walk.
Okay,
yeah.
All right. That's interesting. We should put that on the document for a future topic. But so Health Face, you can like put anything from Health Kit and make it a little complication on your watch. So you pick what you want. So like I could say, show me my water goal as a percentage, like what percentage of water that I'm supposed to drink have I drinking today? And it shows up as a little complication on my watch face. So it's your own complication from any Health Kit data. And I'm just downloaded Waterminder, and it's gonna minder me to drink the water that I need to drink. And then I can and then I can hook it in with Health Face, and I can say based on how much water I tell Waterminder I drink, because it's all through Health Kit. Now it shows me a little percentage of my watch. Isn't that neato?
Yeah. And is my cordless drill okay? Oh, you beat me to it. Is my cordless drill okay? Yeah, that's a good idea. I think that's a big part of the challenge in some ways is like, I don't know, I'm always kind of beating this into my kid's head with projects is like sometimes, you know, you don't want to wait too long to do the thing of the project, but a big part of doing the thing of the project is planning the project. Like, you know, it sucks to get a bad app for stuff like this. It just happened that I was very satisfied with what my Fitness Pal does, but no, I'm with you. Yeah. Yeah. I should try that face thing. That's really cool.
Health Face. App very I have I it's, yeah. very, it's one of the if you want a thing that you can sort of endlessly fidget with and just keep configuring it however you want, oh
that's me,
boy is Health Kit the watch face for you, the watch face complication for you. It's very good.
Oh real time follow up about the iPhone 10. Essentially, I've said this before, my iPhones are very expensive fidget spinners that I just constantly poke at and play with. And you might think, oh, the lack of buttons makes it less useful. But with 3D, is it 3D Touch? They got rid of Force Touch, right? That was a gross name. It's just so good. It feels like there's buttons everywhere. Like everywhere there needs to be a button. A button exists. On the home screen now, you can just press camera or flashlight, and it feels like a button. It's crazy. And I didn't...
The 7 does that pretty well. The two most satisfying, haptic, whatever, the feedback thing. My two favorites are like clicking an icon on the screen. It goes that. I find that very satisfying. And I also love the sound and feel of the dial selector, like for a date or time.
So good.
I love that sound and that feeling so much. That's my ASMR.
The thing where you
but you feel it. It's really decisive. Yep.
Yeah. There's not a lot of like app developers and game designers who have figured out how to use that in the stuff that they're making, but when it's done right, ooh boy, is it satisfying.
Mm.
So nice.
So
you want to talk about your diet, Max?
Well, Merlin, you know, I don't know if our listeners noticed a couple weeks ago when we did the use a gig economy service, but Alex did a gig economy service and Max did a gig economy service, but somehow we did the whole challenge and talked about it and ended the show and did the after show, and Merlin did a gig economy service. You just didn't participate, and we never...
Yeah. I had Applegate Naturals Uncured Black Forest Ham in a container.
Afterwards, Merlin texted us after we did that, and he was like, peanut butter, I got away with it.
Black Angus sirloin hot dog, Cinemark.
What was terrible is I literally didn't notice it until I'm like, Edit,
none of our listeners know.
Nobody noticed it. There was no need for it. You guys did it.
But what was even better is as I'm editing, Max, I hear Max go, I think that's it, right? We're good. And Merlin like takes a beat and he's like, yep, we're done.
All good. Okay, after show.
So, but you did do the food journal.
I had a LaCroix. I had two LaCroix at this point here. Yeah, of course I did the food journal. I always do the challenge. Now, okay, now, are we talking about this? Is this happening? Are we having this conversation? Are you having this conversation? Because I'll have this conversation with you. I did my usual thing where I got a little too ambitious and then I chickened out. Because my initially, you know me, I get a big idea and I get a big plan. And then I realized it was creepy and I didn't want to do it.
Oh.
I wanted to invite a task rabbit into my house to interact with me and give me opinions about the house. And then I got up to the point of ordering it. It was very ambitious. And I thought, you know what? This is creepy for everybody involved. And so how would I present that? Hi, Rabbi. Rabbi, would you please come to my house? I'd like to get your opinions about my house and record it.
For sure that I do. I'm definitely not a creep.
And then I skated. My backup plan was I was going to tell you about various gig economy services that I do use. But no, I'm clocked. I totally didn't do the challenge, and it made the show better. So you're welcome. So there's been discussion. We're getting off the topic of this challenge. But there's been discussion that perhaps there should be stakes and adjudication for deciding if somebody did the challenge, if they attempted the challenge. So cause I still feel like attempting the challenge, like which I obviously didn't really do for this, for that one, I think there should be, I don't want to say a punishment, but there should be probably some kind of a comeuppance. And we've talked about maybe our listeners decide what that is.
Well, may...
I'm open to that within
may
reason.
May I make a proposal? We so we can solicit suggestions in like on Reddit or, well, probably on Patreon. And then we can choose. I mean, obviously, this is not a democracy.
Is it different? Is the punishment different for each challenge?
No, I don't want to have to think. I don't want to have to think of. I don't want to. I think we'll just decide it if it happens. We'll come up with a fair punishment.
Yeah. So we'll ask our listeners. But Patreon has this cool thing now where you can take you can do polls. So we can be like, here are the things, and then so they do have a little bit in the game.
All right, I'm in.
So, Merlin, you only ate cured meats.
Yeah, I've got a few outliers.
You're like pickling yourself.
I'm seeking gout.
You're packed from head to toe with cured meats. Nothing but hams and hot dogs.
You know what? I had not thought of that, but it's kind of true. Yeah, you know, I do a thing sometimes where I'll boil a dozen eggs, especially
if make all
like,
the eggs.
You know, I make all of the eggs. I'll boil the eggs, and I use the New York Times method. So you get a pan on with the water, room temperature, on the stove. You put the eggs in. Sometimes I'll do the poking with the needles, but a lot of times I'm just not up to it. And then you bring that to a boil from room temperature, and from the time you start it boiling to the time you pull it off, no more than 15 minutes, and then drop them into ice water. And it's a pretty good-ass boiled egg. So I'll have those around, because here's the thing. A boiled egg is a fantastic snack. Especially, and this takes a certain amount of mindfulness, which Alex knows about from her retreat. You have
nice.
To catch yourself when you go, brr, I'm hungry. I want to put things in my face that make me feel good. And it's 2:30. Meh. And that's when Chow Mein Boy shows up. And pretty soon you're like, no, leave it. You go and you reach and you take and you grab an egg and you eat an egg and you put salt on and you eat it. You eat the whole thing without the shell. And you eat it. And then you say, now how do I feel? And you go, A surprising amount of time, I go, I'm pretty full. And then sometimes I'll have a second one, and then I'm super full. And it's all just chicken protein. It's all good. So eggs, when I did the Atkins diet and lost all like 30-some pounds, eggs were a big piece of the success story for me because they can be a very good convenience food. So this was a Sunday. I ate a giant packet of ham and two eggs for breakfast with some tea.
One thing I did notice, for the first 15 minutes, I was indeed trying to be conscious about what I ate, and then I was like, oh, fuck it, I have too much work to do.
It makes you self-conscious, doesn't it?
Yeah, well, and also I kept thinking, wow, I want another Diet Coke, really wanted another Diet Coke, but they're already going to make fun of me, so.
I know, I had the same thing with water. You can see how many waters I reported, and that's not anywhere near how many I actually
had. Well, also I realized that last night I had two drinks of Diet Coke and vodka, so that's like another 300 calories of death in me, but I did not know how to report that. But I did report the shameful, technically it was this morning, I guess, that I ate my large fry and drink my large Diet Coke. But
I want it so much right now. I want McDonald's so much right now. I can't even tell you. Just because you mentioned it, I want
guys, it. I'm thinking about it. I'm thinking about it too, but that's not going to happen.
I want Funyuns every hour of every day.
Wow,
now.
I got you hooked on the Funyuns.
But
huh?
I haven't had
the
them again
little,
yet.
Salty little crispy boys.
I haven't had them again. I want them all the time.
Why did we go? Why did that occur?
We were just picking up lunch somewhere, and you're like,
oh, right.
Funyuns.
We were with Matt, friend of the show, Matt.
Mm-hmm.
That's right. I remember mm-hmm. that. We had the Funyuns in the car.
Well, I think I'd mentioned, oh, they don't have it at my place. I think I'd mentioned once before that, like, I think I mentioned that here, but it's a funny thing with Funyuns. You show up with Funyuns. You go, hey, everybody. You pull out a bag of Funyuns, and everybody goes, bleh, what? Funyuns? Gross. And, like, after the moment that bag is open, they will be gone in 3 American minutes. Like, everybody will eat all of the Funyuns immediately. And then, finally, of course, you get your satisfying result, which is everybody goes, like, holy shit, I can't believe Funyuns are this good and I don't eat them more because they might be the perfect snack. The Durky onions are good, too, but they're real greasy.
I'm sure that we've talked about this because I think Max and I are obsessed with it. The New York Times article about how Doritos are the perfect... Like, yes. The perfect snack and, like, how they put just enough powder on it. It's so crazy.
I learned 2 great pieces of, for reasons I can't talk about, I'm learning all this stuff about making chips, and I learned 2 incredible pieces of chip vocabulary this week.
Oh.
Chip vocabulary number 1, I learned about the bite and smile. So whenever you shoot any sort of ad or commercial for potato chips, the key shot is always called the bite and smile. So it's basically where the model who's eating the chip, they bite into it and then they smile real big and they turn towards the camera. And that's always what the producer says. Did you get the bite and smile? Do we have the bite and smile? Did we get the bite and smile? Do we have a couple options on the bite and smile? You get to get the bite and smile. That's number 1. Number 2, I learned another property of chips called toothpack. Toothpack.
Toothpack.
Toothpack. So whoa. Toothpack is when you crunch up a bunch of chips.
Was he killed by Biggie?
Yeah. Well, it was more of a...
It's complicated.
But toothpack was more... It's when you it's when you eat the chips the way that they sort of pack into the crevices in your teeth and leave sort of a paste all wedged up in your teeth.
Oh, no.
And then, yeah, you know... You get a little chips in there. That's called toothpack. Toothpack.
Toothpack.
Toothpack. It's when it packs the teeth. Toothpack. This chip has a good toothpack. Has a good, high quality of toothpack. Now, if you get too much toothpack, it interferes with the bite and smile.
Mm.
Can't do the bite and smile if you have too much toothpack.
Well, life is really about trade-offs. Hour and 56 minutes. Was very surprised. We went to see Thor Ragnarok, which I loved.
Oh.
And I was very excited to see that all of the things that I put in my face were available as items in here. This is the one time pretty much ever mostly that I drink Coke is when I go to a
regular
movie.
Coke? Doesn't it kind of make you feel like sticky? Like your
same.
Whole body?
Yeah, but I don't do it very often. I get chided by my daughter if I drink soda. So what I do is I'll usually do a suicide of half Coke, 1/4 Mr. Pibb, and 1/4 Cherry Coke.
Interesting.
And so I went in there and I said, okay, I had Cinemark Theaters, large Coke with ice, 1 large, 3 pints. I had a Black Angus sirloin hot dog, had a big ass hot dog. And I had, technically I had part of a bag of popcorn and I noted it as... such. I thought that was kind of cool, though. And what's nice is they've got pretty much all the great brands are in there. Like, almost anything you can think of. And if it doesn't have it, this is so cool. Did you guys use this? Did you utilize this? You can scan a barcode?
Oh, that's the main way that I put stuff in.
You would.
I don't eat meat movies.
I do not enjoy the pressing of buttons with disgusting human fingers. Prefer interaction model of optical device discovering the barcode zebra.
No, because you can use... You use 3D touch. You hit scan barcode. It just pops up. Oh, now so
Alex,
scan
your phone.
My...
It's like an Inspector Gadget happening right now. The lights are flashing and there's sounds and there's like claws coming out of it. It's fucking crazy.
I have not touched my phone since before we started.
I was just scanning my Red Bull.
I don't mean this to sound as obnoxious as I know that it's going to come off, but I do not eat anything with a barcode on it.
Oh, wow. I don't even own a QR code. How would I even get that?
There's nothing in my diet that I can scan.